big show for you here today. Our final edition of teams that will shape the draft. Today, Justin Boone and I look at teams that either, one of these is both, have no first round pick or have double digit picks in the NFL draft. So a lot of different teams at different levels of their team builds. We talk about the Ravens. We talk about the Jags, the Pittsburgh Steelers, also the Raiders, the team that's picking first in the NFL draft, plus teams like the Broncos and the Packers. Are there some fantasy disruptors coming to what look like pretty set depth charts right now? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because we are squarely in the middle of draft season. I just came off a two-hour, yes, I'm not kidding, two-hour Football 301 podcast that literally ended minutes, maybe more so seconds before we got this show kicked off live. So definitely make sure to check that show out with Nate Tice, of course. But joining me today to talk a little ball, you see him on the screen already. It is our guy, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, man?
Man, what's going on with you? I feel like we got to give you some props here because you kind of like just went over it quickly. But the fact that you record so many shows, even this time of year, we're technically in the off season. I mean, draft season is one of the more fun times of the off season. But even at this point in the year, you are going pod to pod the way you do it, man. It's very impressive. And I think people should know that because I don't think they get to see behind the scenes all the time just how much you're doing for them.
Well, you know, that's what the paychecks are for, Ben. You know, got to make sure to earn it. Got to make sure to earn it. But no, yeah. When I'm not doing pods, I'm charting. Okay, like it's pods and routes, pods and routes, pods and routes. Maybe some weightlifting and walking in the middle. Other than that, like that is life. Because as I said, it's draft season, man. This thing is coming up. We're like what, 10 days away from the NFL draft here right now. Maybe less than that now at this point. Things are happening. And on that note, nine days until the NFL draft. It's funny, Boone. Like I said this to Dane Brugler yesterday. We did mock draft Monday. I both want the draft to get here so that, you know, we can see what happens. We can start analyzing landing spots for our favorite rookies. Also said that the work can essentially be done. And yet I need more than 9 days to finish all the work and finish all the charting that I have to do. So it's a little bit of mixed feelings for me right now as it comes to the NFL draft being in 9 days.
And I feel like I'm the opposite. Like, I just want it here. I want it here immediately. I wish we could just skip ahead to next week because for me, that's when we finally get most of the pieces in place, right? Fantasy wise. And then I can start to build out all the projections and not sit here building them out knowing full well. Like today, I did my backup running back rankings and I thought it would be a good exercise to do going into the draft because of how much it's probably going to change post-draft. But you do that now, we want to know where are these guys going to be? Which backfields are going to get rookie backs that are going to change things for them? I just want it here now. I'm excited for it to happen. And yeah, we still got 9 days to kill here.
And yet, it's not here. We must continue to talk in hypotheticals and preview what could happen in just 9 days. And that is what we're going to do here today. It is our final edition of teams that shape the draft. And we're going to end by looking at teams that either have one of these teams I think has both, either have 10 plus picks in the NFL draft or teams that have no first round picks this year. The Jags are the ones that cross both lines here. They have 11 picks in the draft and yet they do not have a first rounder. So teams with 10 plus picks, we're talking Ravens, Raiders, Steelers, and the aforementioned Jaguars. And then teams with no first round picks, we've got the Falcons, the Colts, the Broncos, and the Packers. So really interesting teams to break down today. Let's jump into, for our first segment, let's talk about some of these teams that have 10 plus picks in the NFL draft. And let's begin with the Baltimore Ravens. Here's a recap of what they have done so far this offseason. They re-signed quarterback Tyler Huntley to be their backup on a two-year deal after a one-year flirtation with the former Cowboys backup there. No more of that. No more Cooper Rush. Tight end Durham Smythe followed offensive coordinator Declan Doyle from the Bears. He comes over on a free agent deal to the Baltimore Ravens. Center Danny Pinter signed with the Ravens. Offensive lineman John Simpson signs on a 3-year deal after a stint with the New York Jets. He returns to Baltimore. Trey Hendrickson nothing weird happened with this deal. This was just a pretty clean cut situation. Trey Hendrickson signed a 4-year, $112 million deal. Cornerback Chidobe Awuzie re-signed on a fully guaranteed 1-year, $5 million contract. And safety Jalen Hawkins also signed with the team. Here's their team needs according to mockdraftdatabase.com. Interior offensive lineman. Obviously, center is a pretty big question mark after losing Tyler Linderbaum. Wide receiver, offensive tackle, and tight end. So, Boone, a lot of positions on the offensive side of the football. What are you looking at when you come to the Baltimore Ravens here?
I'm curious. Do you think that they're going to spend an early pick here on a skill position? Because I think you could make an argument that they could use guys at every skill position. Like, we could start at tight end where they just lost Isaiah Likely. They have Mark Andrews. Charlie Kolar's gone, so could we get somebody else in there? I think Durham Smythe is right. He's going to be their number two. You mentioned him there. So I think they could use some youth at tight end. Obviously, Derrick Henry is just kind of fighting off the age curve every single season, and each year we think it might be the time that he falls off that cliff. Hasn't happened yet. I think there's been maybe some signs of a little bit of decline, but fantasy-wise, he keeps producing, but who's behind him? Like Justice Hill, Rasheen Ali. Like, they need someone else, I think, in that backfield. Now, is this the draft class to go out and get somebody that could potentially take over and be that heir apparent? I don't know, but I think they should be drafting someone at some point to put behind Derrick Henry there. And then the most interesting one to me is receiver, because they've tried, right? They've definitely tried in the last 5 or so years here with Zay Flowers, who has turned into a very nice receiver for them. Rashad Bateman, who, you know, poor one out. I think we both liked him, but it hasn't exactly happened. And I don't know how many receivers end up breaking out once they get to like their sixth NFL year. So I don't know that that's actually going to happen for them. So could they potentially go out and get a receiver as early as the first round? I think that's definitely in play. And not to, you know, jump into a dynasty conversation, but I was feeling really good about Zay Flowers when there was all the Max Crosby trade talk that you kind of alluded to there with the Trey Hendrickson stuff, right? And it looked like, okay, this team is not going to have a first round pick potentially for a couple of years. And what does that mean for Zay Flowers being that number one guy, getting a ton of volume? Now they have those picks back, and I think it would make a lot of sense for the Ravens to go out and get a receiver who could step in there and give them another weapon for Lamar Jackson, who, let's face it, we talked about this a bunch last year. Lamar Jackson had a down season in the second half of the year, and there were a lot of reasons for it. Injuries to him, injuries to some of the players around him, but still, he was not a great fantasy quarterback in the second half of the year last year. You figure he comes back healthy this season, but why not go out, get him another weapon? Let's get excited about what this offense could be in 2026.
Yeah, I'm obviously Lamar, we'll see what it looks like, but I really am interested to see him operate in this offense with Declan Doyle as the offensive coordinator. I don't think it will be a full structural change. Like, they ran a lot of heavy personnel packages. They used a lot of drop back with motion last year. They generally were a zone blocking team with Derrick Henry there. And that's a lot of the principles that I think Declan Doyle is going to bring in here under what is going to look like a Ben Johnson type offense. So I don't think it will be a huge adjustment period, but I think I could get pretty excited about what this looks like if everything comes together. I agree with your point about Zay Flowers kind of being underrated at this point. He's a good receiver. Is he like the true traditional number one wide receiver? I don't know about that, but I mean, he beats man coverage. He's a really good, he's always been a very good zone beater. In his first two seasons, he was like one of the best success rate versus zone coverage numbers I charted. Like, he can run real deal routes. And at this point, like, the production is up there. Like, he was awesome from a yards per route run standpoint last year. So I do kind of think he's a little bit underrated at this standpoint. Like, maybe there's another leap that comes for him. Like, he's good. We know he's good, but could he be great? I think potentially that could happen in his fourth year. I think we kind of saw some signs of it early in his third year before the offense fell into some chaos. I think I'd be a little bit surprised if they go receiver at 14, but Boone, I think they're an ideal landing spot for Kenyon Sadiq to be the first tight end off the board at the 14th overall pick. They need a second tight end. You mentioned it. And Sadiq, I think, would be perfectly deployed in this style of offense. I always come back to how Ben Johnson used Sam Laporta, who was another guy that similar size-ish, a little bit bigger, but similar size board, similar size build to, Kenyon Sadiq. And they really got him blocking on the move. They did that a little bit with Colson Loveland last year in Chicago. Like, cutting all the way across the formation. I think that's where Sadiq, as an undersized tight end, is going to be best as a blocker. So I think that would be a pretty cool landing spot for a guy like Kenyon Sadiq, and they definitely need the second tight end. I think they're more likely to do that in round one than take a wide receiver, but I am obviously just guessing there.
It would fill the same need, though, right? We're talking about just another weapon in the passing game, and Sadiq could definitely be that. We've talked about him multiple times here in the lead up to the draft about what an exciting player he could be, what an awesome pass catcher he can be, contested catches. Like, I really, really like him. And I think, though, if he ended up with the Ravens, that would probably be a bit of a downgrade for his fantasy outlook. Like, obviously, we would love to see a guy go somewhere where he can be, you know, the main pass catcher as a tight end. There are not that many spots where that actually happens. But if he goes there, are we not going to have some of the Isaiah Likely thing again? And yes, some changes to the offense, as you mentioned, but are we not going to have that Mark Andrews kind of in there catching some touchdowns, being a bit of a pain, Zay Flowers taking a bunch of volume? Like, I don't know that I would feel super excited about Sadiq, at least in 2026. I think long term for sure would still be excited about him dynasty wise, but I would worry about him coming in and having a big impact, like we've seen a lot of rookie tight ends do in recent years. I don't know that Baltimore would be that landing spot where I'd like to see him go, but from a real life standpoint, I think that would be a slam dunk for sure.
Right. And I think that the thing with Sadiq, though, is that I think he is probably one of the, I don't know if he's one of those guys. And obviously we'll have the tight end prospect preview show with Nate Tice next later on this week. So that's coming on Thursday. So we'll talk more about Sadiq, but I kind of suspect he might be a guy that needs a couple years anyways to sort of find his true home in the NFL. So maybe this would almost like prevent fantasy managers from making a big, big mistake by like rushing out and being like thinking he could be the next big tight end. So maybe there's something to that. But last thing just on the Ravens, because you brought this up. Where are you at with Lamar Jackson? Like, where do you think you're going to end? Obviously, again, we got to see what they do in the draft. I think they'll end up with multiple pass catchers probably by the end of it. I mean, my good friend Rashad Bateman had 19 catches last year. 19 catches. He had 9 touchdowns the year before. He had 19 catches last year. My therapist says I'm actually not allowed to talk about Rashad Bateman anymore, so I need to stop talking right now. They're going to come away with multiple pass catchers. Nevertheless, though, just like Lamar Jackson, kind of in like a strange spot in his career. Like, maybe this is almost like his third or fourth act as the Ravens starting quarterback. Where are you at with Lamar?
I still have him as QB2 behind Josh Allen. And I know that might surprise some people based on how many people were writing into the Panic Meter episodes during the second half of the season and questioning what they should be doing with him. And we held strong for a lot of those weeks, you know, figuring it was going to come back around as he got healthier. And it really didn't happen. It was pretty sporadic down the stretch, right? He only finished inside the top 12 quarterbacks in 2 of his last 8 outings last year. That is very un-Lamar Jackson-like. But like I said, I think it would be very nice to get him another weapon, give them something to get excited about, right? Like, it's not just the same old, we're coming back with the same weapons or even potentially less weapons with Isaiah Likely out of the mix there, right? Give them something new for the offense to get excited about, for Lamar to get excited about, and for fantasy managers potentially to get excited about, because we know when this offense is humming on all cylinders, it can be one of the best in the league, one of the most fun to roster in fantasy. And we just didn't see that in the second half of the season last year very much.
All right, let's get to our next team here. Keep it moving through the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have no first round pick, but they do have double digit picks in this year's NFL draft. I think mostly thanks to that Isaac Tesla trade last year when they got multiple third round picks. So yeah, they pick 3 times in the third round, twice in the 5th round, and 3 times in the 7th round. And my guess is they're not going to keep all those picks. They're going to be doing some wheeling and dealing up and down the draft board. So expect to see that here from Jacksonville. But here is a list of their off-season moves so far. They re-signed running back DJ Dallas. They brought in running back Chris Rodriguez Jr. from Washington on a 2-year deal. He has history with Liam Cohen dating back to the Kentucky days. Tight end Quentin Morris re-signed on a free agent deal. Edge Dennis Gardeck re-signed on a free agent deal. Trayvon Walker signs a 4-year, $110 million extension with the team. Matt Dickerson re-signed on a free agent deal. And cornerback Monteric Brown re-signed on a 3-year deal. So not a lot of activity, not a lot of outside movement from the Jacksonville Jaguars here. A lot of retaining their own. And then the big sticker item is we brought in Chris Rodriguez. Okay, so their team needs, as it stands right now, according to Mock Draft Database, defensive line, linebacker. They lost Devin Lloyd to the Panthers in free agency. Running back, of course, Travis Achane moves on to New Orleans. They bring in Chris Rodriguez. And then safety is a need for this team. So I think we have a lot of fantasy questions about this team, Boone, based on the holdovers and some of the guys that were there last year and maybe the lack of additions so far.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was the big jump for them came last season, right? Liam Cohen showing up. They had a great year. I think that makes sense that they're just trying to, you know, hold their own and see if they can, you know, make some moves in a couple different spots. But overall, got to be pretty happy with how last year worked out for them. I think for fantasy, the big question, this is going to probably be a debate throughout the offseason until we get any sort of clarity on it. And that might not come until late in the summer, is what's going to happen in this backfield, right? What is going to happen between Bashaul Tuten and Chris Rodriguez? And for me, I know fantasy wise where I want to place my chips, and that's with Tuten. Like, Bashaul Tuten is the guy that has the more complete profile, the younger player. He's 23. Chris Rodriguez, 27. Chris Rodriguez been in the league for a few years here, never topped 500 rushing yards in a season, never really proved to a coaching staff that he was that guy that deserved to be the starter long term. I don't know that I really see it with him. Like, I think at best, we're going to see some sort of committee. If you're talking about best case scenario for Chris Rodriguez without Bashaul Tuten getting hurt, obviously, would be some sort of committee. And I think that would just cap Rodriguez as like a low end RB2 in the best case kind of scenario. But more likely, that touchdown or bust RB3 doesn't really bring much in the passing game. Like, he's just kind of a limited player. A nice signing. I know the connection to the coaching staff that he has going back to his college days, but don't forget, Bashaul Tuten last year as a rookie flashed some upside, scored 7 touchdowns, had that nose for the end zone. He does bring something as a pass catcher as well. So I think he's the guy, if for fantasy, if you're going to bet on one of these guys actually erupting, becoming that league winner type, Tuten's the profile that you're going to go for. Rodriguez might end up being a value for fantasy, but I don't think he's going to be the kind of value that's going to win you your league. I think he's just going to be that guy that, you know, maybe you get him as the RB35 and he ends up giving you, you know, RB26 or 27 value. That can be useful throughout the season, but that's not the thing that's going to propel you to win in your fantasy league, right? Tuten could potentially step up, fill a lot of what Travis Achane brought to the table and be that guy, be that, you know, RB1, top 15 kind of guy. That's best case scenario, you know, best case scenario for sure. But he has that within his range of outcomes. I just don't think Rodriguez does.
Yeah, I think that's, you nailed it on that. I believe when the signing happened, I was doing the show, I think with Scott at the time, maybe it was someone else. And I texted you about where are you ranking these two guys? And you said that you'd had Chris Rodriguez at running back like 39-ish or so. And I was like, Yeah, I was like, that's the most this guy exists ranking that you could possibly have. But I think they're probably good at running back. If they really, like, if they draft another running back, then that's a pretty clear sign. They're like, ooh, maybe they aren't that high internally on Bashaul Tuten. That would obviously be a pretty big signal. But theoretically, I think they've got a good, like, all right, Chris Rodriguez could maybe be short yardage, maybe a goal line back. Bashaul Tuten is your lead back. And then LaQuint Allen is a name to mention, too, as the guy who will play some passing downs, long down and distance. He brings a lot in the blocking game there. So that does sort of, probably, if that comes to pass, probably caps Tuten's upside. But there's also a chance like Tuten just comes in year 2 and he looks awesome. Like, that very much exists. So I think having that kind of in the range of outcomes is important, and remembering that for him. I am already sick of talking about the wide receiver room. And I think I've been sick of talking about the wide receiver room for like since before last season ended. So I'm going to make you talk about it. Do you have any strong stance on, yeah, that's right. Do you have any strong stance on where the wide receivers will end up? Like, obviously, if you would like to talk about some of the, what I think is, I don't even know what to say about like the way people have reacted to some of these Travis Hunter report, not reports. The GM said in January he's going to play more cornerback. That doesn't mean he's not going to play wide receiver. Obviously, he's not going to be a full-time wide receiver because he's going to be playing. I don't know. It's just like a very circuitous art. Like, the media literacy is at an all-time low. That's like this tweet here is like exactly what I'm talking about. Whoever this Evan guy is, like, that's not, nobody said 50-50 split. It wasn't 50-50 last year. Like, it's just, it's stupid. This is like all time stupid media literacy stuff. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or any thoughts on the wide receivers, but I'm sick of talking about this wide receiver room. So why don't you talk about it, Boone?
Well, first off, I always remind people, whether it's fantasy, whether it's politics, whether it's anything, if you see like an aggregator put out a headline, if you see somebody tweet something out that's just like a one-liner, their take on something, please click through. Go read the article.
Yeah.
Go read the quotes yourself. Go form your own opinion on it, because you're trusting people Correct. To do that for you. And people don't always do a great job with that, right? So that's something I always want to remind people to do. Regardless, Harmon, I have them up in front of me right now. I hate my rankings for the Jags receivers. And the good news is that we're at a time in the year where I have a lot of time to feel better about it. And that's kind of one of the things in my process. When I have something in my rankings that I'm not really happy with, I will just spend all the time in the world. As we get closer to the season, I won't sleep. When we're in the season, I won't sleep. I will make sure that by the time those rankings are finally published, when we get to the main fantasy draft season, or when it's time to set your lineups week to week, I will make sure that I am happy with them. But right now, man, I hate this. And like, you could look at the ADPs along with it, right? Brian Thomas, wide receiver 31. He's going in the sixth round. Parker Washington, wide receiver 35. He's going in the sixth round. These are best ball, but that's the best thing we have this time of year. We're talking about ADPs. Jacoby Myers, wide receiver 41 in the eighth round. Travis Hunter, wide receiver 46, going outside of the top 150. And those are more recent drafts, obviously, and that's factoring in some of the news that's come out, or non-news, if you will, because it's come out so many times this offseason. If you're basing it on those ADPs and you're looking at my rankings, the only guys in this receiver core that I'm going to have any of is Jacoby Myers and maybe a little bit of Travis Hunter as like dart throw late in drafts. And I don't like that, because I really want to have pieces of this offense. I really want to have some Parker Washington. But man, do you feel good about Parker Washington going that high? Wide receiver 35 in the sixth round. I know what he did down the stretch last year. I think he's intriguing as a player. But to me, you are spending up to get that guy. It's tough for me to get him that high in my rankings. So I don't have a great feel here. I will remind people that, especially with the draft coming up, Brian Thomas Jr., that trade is still possible. There still could be something in the mix here. He could get moved, right? There's lots of things that happen around the draft. I don't think it's impossible that he could get moved out of the way, and then all of a sudden Travis Hunter gets back in the mix. But it really looks like this is going to be a group where we have all four guys involved, where yes, even if Travis Hunter's playing more on defense, he is still going to get snaps on offense. He's still going to be a factor on offense. And that makes me worried. Like, that makes me worried this could turn into kind of what we've seen from the Packers receiver core, for example, in recent seasons, right? You might get the odd guy who blows up, but you have so many talented receivers in that room that they all kind of limit each other fantasy wise. And it becomes very difficult to project for a season, or especially week to week. That's kind of how I'm looking at it, as something that I think is going to be very frustrating. A bunch of these guys are going to have value, but I worry that the BTJ ADP right now and that Parker Washington ADP, it kind of has them in a range where I don't know that I'm going to have that many pieces if they stay there.
I think that's all really fair. And yeah, I was thinking, as you were talking and kind of outlining this group, I was thinking about like a Packers type situation where we have one guy, and in fairness, it probably would be BTJ based on his role as the vertical X receiver, much like we saw with Romeo Doubs be the guy who just is on the field the most. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to get the most targets, especially on a per route basis, exactly what we saw with Romeo Doubs in Green Bay, because he's running some of the sacrificial routes, he's doing some of the things to open things up for other players, and a lot of the like designer layup targets are going to go to a Parker Washington or a Travis Hunter when he's on the field, Jacoby Myers as the guy who runs the best routes over the middle of the field against zone coverage. So now, not to mention like Brenton Strange, it really showed a lot of growth as a tight end. So the funny thing about this team, Boone, is that I actually don't think we will get what I'm going to refer to as like a draft disruptor, you know, added here. Cause like, yeah. I generally think they're probably set, unless I don't know, but anything can happen, but I don't think they'll take a premium. And then obviously they don't have a round one pick anyways, but I don't think they'll take a premium wide receiver. I kind of think they won't add like a significant running back. So I think the table's set with this group of guys. And yet there's still so many questions with these group of guys that I don't even know if we'll get any indications on until maybe deep into training camp. So we've got months and months of hypotheticals waiting for us with this Jaguars offense that I generally want to be invested in year two of Liam Cohen.
Yeah, and I will also say that this is a very smart way to build your roster in real life, right? They're not, the GM is not worried about what's happening for fantasy. We're trying to pick up the pieces and figure out who we should have shares of for fantasy. This is exactly what I would want in a receiver room in real life, right? They have a ton of versatility. They got four guys so that if an injury happens, all of a sudden now they can play Travis Hunter more. So they have some depth there. I think this is really, really good for them. I just think for fantasy managers, it is going to be a bit of a struggle here until we get clarity. And like you said, we may never get clarity on this one.
It's been a bit of a struggle for fantasy value in Pittsburgh here of late. So let's talk about them as our next team. They have double-digit picks. This is what they've done so far in the offseason. They signed running back Rico Dowdle to a two-year deal. Running back Travis Homer also was brought in. Wide receiver Michael Pittman was their big addition on offense, acquired in a trade with the Colts along with a seventh-round pick in exchange for a sixth-round pick. They quickly turned around and gave him a three-year, $59 million deal. Jack Driscoll signed a one-year deal. Center Ryan McCollum re-signed on a one-year deal. Cameron Hayward signed a new two-year, $32.3 million extension. Sebastian Joseph Day signed a two-year deal with the team. Cole Holcomb re-signed on a two-year deal. Jamel Dean gets a three-year deal. Asante Samuel Jr. brought back on a one-year deal. Safety Jaquan Brisker signed on a one-year deal, as did safety Darnell Savage. So they addressed some areas in the secondary that they certainly needed to address. This is their team needs right now as it stands according to Mock Draft Database. Offensive tackle, mainly left tackle there. Wide receiver, interior offensive line, and of course, quarterback. And I can't believe we are entering another draft season and we're doing the when's Aaron Rodgers thing going to sign again. So here's their depth chart as it stands right now without Rodgers because he's truly not under contract with the team. Boone, what are you looking at when it comes to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, we got to figure out the quarterback thing, but from a fantasy perspective, I don't know how much it's going to matter. Like, I don't know that there's a guy out there, including Rodgers, that's going to boost these pass catchers into a realm where we're going to feel good about them fantasy-wise, because you can look at what Rodgers did last year. He loves checking the ball down. I mean, I know different coaching staff, one that he's, you know, familiar with, but Rodgers at this stage of his career, he wants to run a slower offense. They were fifth in fewest plays per game last year, right? Like, I just don't see a scenario where we can get excited about DK Metcalf and Michael Pittman now that they're both there, because last year Metcalf wasn't even playing at a 1,000-yard pace. He missed a couple games late in the season, but he wasn't going to crack 1,000 yards even if he played all 17 games, and he had barely any target competition. Now you bring in a volume guy like Michael Pittman there, and I know you've brought up that, you know, sometimes Rodgers can lock on to a guy and maybe Pittman could become that guy, put up a decent touchdown total and have some fantasy value that way. Where he's going in drafts, you can get him very, very cheap. And if you want to, by all means, do it. I am not going to be. I will not be investing in this passing game. I just don't see the upside. And on the off chance that it's not Rodgers, is there a guy out there that makes you excited? Like Mason Rudolph, Will Howard, no thank you. In the draft, Ty Simpson, like I just don't really feel that great about Ty Simpson coming in and being a meaningful NFL quarterback right away. So I don't see it, Harmon. I don't see a path here. Maybe invest in the running backs, but other than that, the Steelers offense, I'm not going to have a lot of shares of it.
Yeah, I could be totally wrong on this, but I wonder if they just won't do the Ty Simpson thing when they took Kenny Pickett in this exact draft range previously, and it just completely blew up in their face. Like sometimes organizational battle scars, you know, run deep there, but I think it could be interesting if they take him and would certainly just mark a pivot from the Rodgers thing. Cause we just know, if this is Rodgers, we know what it's going to look like. And I do think Michael Pittman pairs really well with Rodgers, but that's only to the point that like, he just might out-target DK Metcalf, which just makes me not want to draft DK Metcalf. So I agree. If this is, and again, this is so stupid that we don't know who's starting a quarterback for this team. You know, last year, this time last year, we were doing the show with Danny Heifetz, who guested on the pod on this series, and we were talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I said, like, what if Rodgers is just gearing up to retire on draft day? you know, because it's like his, he's got trauma from how he fell in the draft. Danny and I were joking about that, about like, yeah, he just has like deep trauma that he's still working through for falling in the draft and all that. And his way of getting revenge is retiring on draft night. And I, you know what, Boone, maybe I was just, you know, never wrong just early on that one. Maybe he retires on draft night this year.
Yeah, maybe. Which team, though? Which team would he wait till they were on the clock to draft? Is it the Packers we think he has the biggest grudge towards?
No,
he would wait and try to
would do it right, like during the pre-show nonsense, so that he becomes the talking point, you see?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with him, anything is possible. I could definitely see that. I will also say quick on the backfield, though, because I hate talking about Rodgers, especially when we get into his off-field stuff. Just with the backfield, Rico Dowdle, very interesting to me because he does have the connection with McCarthy. We've seen him the last two seasons. There are not a lot of running backs out there that can say they put up over 1,300 scrimmage yards each of the last 2 years. Dowdle has done that. I think we could see him come in there and carve out a very big role in that backfield. And maybe he's somebody that we could see have a little bit of value there. But yeah, overall, I'm just advising stay away from the Steelers offense when it comes to fantasy.
All right, we're going to take our first quick break of the show. When we come back, we're talking about more teams that have double-digit picks in the draft, including the team that's going to pick very first in the NFL draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and as promised, we're talking about the team that is picking first in the NFL draft. Yes, that is the Las Vegas Raiders. They also have 10 picks overall in this year's draft. Here's what they've done so far this offseason. They signed Kirk Cousins to what is essentially a fully guaranteed one-year deal. Don't even bother looking at the contract details. Kirk Cousins is on the team. What a nightmare. Anyways, fullback Connor Hayward signed a two-year deal. Wide receiver Jalen Naylor brought in on a three-year, $35 million deal. Spencer Burford was brought in from the San Francisco 49ers. Center Tyler Linderbaum signed a big old three-year, $81 million deal. Edge Malcolm Kuntz was re-signed on a one-year deal. Edge Quiddy Pay signed a deal worth $16 million per year. Linebacker Nakobe Dean, three-year, $36 million. Linebacker Quay Walker, 3 years, $40.5 million. Cornerback Teron Johnson acquired in a trade with the Buffalo Bills, along with a 2026 seventh round pick. Cornerback Eric Stokes re-signed on a three-year deal, and kicker Matt Gay signed a free agent deal. Okay, team needs quarterback, not for long. Wide receiver, offensive tackle, defensive line. Boone, we know what this team is going to do first in the draft. They're going to take Fernando Mendoza. Once they do that, what else needs to happen? My God, this magazine cover that we're showing here on the screen, unbelievable stuff. Once they do that, what else do they need to do? And how excited can you get about this Mendoza, Cousins holding down the fort for a little bit, the bridge quarterback paired up with Clint Kubiak? How excited can you get about this offense here?
I think you can get fairly excited about some of the pieces in this offense. I think that quarterback room is better than at least some other teams that we're going to talk about, including the one that comes after this on our list. I think this offense, though, there's some reasons to get excited. They've invested in the offensive line. That was a huge, huge need for them. They still should continue to invest in that offensive line. The Kubiak of it all is the reason that I'm getting a little more excited about how this could turn out this year. And also Brock Bowers coming back healthy. I hope people don't forget just how good this guy is. 2 years ago, he was putting up massive stats. You know, he was topping Trey McBride, even though Trey McBride 2 years ago also had a great season. I think we could see Bowers come back and be the number one fantasy tight end overall. And in fact, I've started to kind of move in that direction where I think I might bump him above McBride at some point here, just because McBride, and this is going off on a bit of a tangent, but McBride dealing with probably a little more target competition if Marvin Harrison Jr. stays healthy, you know, with Michael Wilson and what we saw him do last year. A lot of what McBride did was when Harrison was out of that lineup in the second half of the season. So I think we could see McBride take just a slight step back. And Bowers, his season just got derailed by injuries. We saw him come out, start strong, and then it wasn't the same the rest of the year. So you see him come back. You see him right now still really be that de facto number one receiver on this roster. And we could see another monster year from him like we saw 2 years ago in his rookie season. But I will say, you're asking what they're going to do after that first overall pick. They have to invest in a receiver, don't they, Harmon? Like, you can't go into your season with Trey Tucker and Jalen Naylor and Jack Besh. Like, this is a brutal receiver room. They need some more talent in there. They have to do something. I don't know exactly who they will be going after, but they have to use a day two pick and get a receiver to try to give Mendoza some weapons, because you're doing him a massive disservice. Even if he doesn't start in week one, he is eventually going to take over that job. And you cannot trot your rookie quarterback out there with this receiver room.
Yeah, like, I think these guys are all credible role players. And I still have hope that Besh could maybe be even more than that. But you don't know for sure after the rookie year that he just had. And they're all going to kind of orbit around Brock Bowers, which is obviously, like, he'll be the top targeted player. I think they certainly need somebody that can play outside on the ball, because Besh is probably big slot Z receiver. Naylor is a slot Z receiver. Tucker is a guy who should be off the ball. So I think that's a big thing here, is they kind of need somebody in that regard. Like, yeah, a big receiver in the Denzel Boston mold. I don't know if Denzel Boston's going to make it to the second round, but that's definitely the type of receiver that they need, like a big body to play on the line of scrimmage. I agree, that's a need for sure. But otherwise, like, yeah, this is a pretty talented offense. Like, they should continue to invest right tackle, interior offensive lineman definitely is still a need here. You feel pretty good about left tackle and center, but everywhere else you can continue to kind of make additions. I wanted to come back to the Bowers point here, Boone, because, like, people, you know, it's like, well, how could you not rank Trey McBride tight end one after what he did last year? I almost think, like, this is a stupid thought, and you're the rankings guy and I'm not. I feel like every year from now on, we should just, like, never rank the same guy first overall at the position who finished first overall last year. Cause, like, yeah, the odds are the field is the better bet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think I might do that going forward. Just, like, never rank the guy first. Like, how could you not? Well, he's probably not going to finish first again this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he didn't get hurt last year, I would not be shocked if he had a season equivalent to McBride like he did the year before. And we're showing his stats from last season, I think, on the screen right now. But let's not forget what he did in 2024. 112 catches, almost 1,200 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Like, those are monster numbers from the tight end position. And I see no reason why he can't get back to that, especially with the current state of this receiver room. But even if they do draft a receiver in, you know, it would have to be day two at this point, because we know they're not taking one in the, you know, top 10. Man, who's it going to be that's going to come in and usurp Bowers as that number one guy? It's just not going to happen. So I think he is set up really nicely. I think Genty's set up really nicely. I will also mention, and this is one of those, like, slightly deeper moves for fantasy, but let's keep an eye on them taking a running back in this draft as well. And many times we've discussed the running back group and how after Jeremiah Love, it's not quite as exciting. There's a couple interesting guys, not quite as deep as we saw certainly last year, but they don't have really anyone else on this depth chart that could serve as that number two. Dylan Lobby's not that guy. Chris Collier, like, they need to get someone else. And that could be a veteran signing down the road. But I think they probably will take a running back on, you know, maybe day two, probably more a day three guy, and try to fill out the depth chart that way. But they need to take someone, and whoever they take, I'm going to be interested, because that person is going to have a good shot to be the number two back on that depth chart and be one Ashton Genty injury away from having some really solid fantasy value, potentially getting a start.
That's a really good call. And Clint Kubiak obviously said earlier this offseason, I think it was at the combine, right, that he said that he wants a two-man show back there. That doesn't mean Jendy's going to be in a committee or split carries or anything, but they certainly want someone to be a change of pace there. Atlanta Falcons, next team up to talk about. Here's what they've done this offseason. They signed Trevor Siemian at quarterback. Not the only quarterback move, because they brought in Tua Tagovailoa on a one-year deal worth the veteran minimum. Running back Tyler Goodson signed with the Falcons, as did running back Brian Robinson signed a one-year deal with the team. Wide receiver Jahan Dotson, yes, Super Bowl champion Jahan Dotson, signs a two-year $15 million deal. Tight end Austin Hooper signs a one-year contract. Tight end Kyle Pitts got the franchise tag, and he signed the franchise tag. Offensive tackle Juwan Taylor signed a one-year deal with the team after Caleb McGarry retired when the team was reporting for activities in the offseason. Samson Ekubam signed with the Falcons. Edge Aziz Ojulari also signed a one-year contract. Cameron Thomas signed a free agent contract. Lakeil London re-signed with the team. Deshaun Hand signs a 1-year, $3 million contract. Chris Williams signs a 1-year deal on the defensive line, as did Christian Harris, the linebacker. Cornerback Darnay Holmes signed with the team. Safety Sidney Brown was acquired in a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles for a swap of late-round draft picks. Kicker Nick Folk signs a 2-year contract. Punter Jake Bailey also signed with the team. Their team needs, according to Mock Draft Database, wide receiver, cornerback, defensive lineman, offensive tackle. Kind of hedge your bets on the Juwan Taylor thing there. Plus, Jake Matthews has played forever at that position, so that is certainly something there. Boone, I'm going to throw it to you with a question of my own here. How excited can you get about this Falcons team with a banged-up Michael Penix, who's still unproven at this point, coming back from injury? Don't care what anyone says. He's still unproven. And the alternative is Tua after a disaster class season in Miami. It's just making me nervous about getting excited. Look, Bijan's awesome. Bijan will be awesome. Drake London is awesome. I don't know. Change of offensive systems. I really liked how he's deployed in the last offense. I don't know, man. The quarterback situation's kind of got me bummed about this whole Falcons operation.
Yeah, it's brutal. And they've put themselves in this position, and I don't really see what the end is unless we look towards next season and the next draft coming up, right? Like, it's not coming this year. I don't really think either of these guys are going to be the answer. I hope that Penix can get healthy and be the guy, because we've seen Tua and what he is. And at this point in his career, I don't think he's the one who's coming in to save this franchise. So yeah, the quarterback position is a big problem. And I agree with you. As it's currently constructed, you look at this depth chart across the skill positions. I mean, Sean's going to be fine. Drake London, I think, will still be really good, be a top 10 guy like you're talking about. I think Pitts might be the one that people are probably going to be a little too high on based on what they saw him do last year. And I've reminded everyone that it was like a tale of two seasons for him. And in the first 11 weeks when Drake London was out there most of the time, Pitts was the tight end 21 in fantasy points per game. Different offense, of course, but still wasn't producing when London was healthy. And then London gets hurt late in the season. He came back. I don't think he was really the same. And during that time when London was out, Pitts was the tight end 3 in fantasy points per game. And he had some really, really big performances there over the final 8 weeks of the fantasy calendar. But yeah, I don't really know what we can say. Like, this is kind of a team that I just look at and I want to move past, because it seems pretty obvious to me that Robinson's going to be good, that I like that they brought in Brian Robinson to give them a competent backup. I think he's interesting. And last year, you know, he signs with the 49ers and he sits behind Christian McCaffrey and everyone held them on their bench just waiting, right? That CMC injury is going to happen, and it never came. You're going to do the same this year. And Bijan Robinson is younger. We don't expect that he's going to hurt. We don't want him to get hurt. I'm going to try to find every piece of wood in this room to knock on. We don't want to see him get injured this year. But if that happens, Brian Robinson Jr. is a decent back, and he can step in and give us some good fantasy value there. So keep him in mind. But yeah, man, the only other guy I can think of talking about right now, we've already mentioned him on the show before, is Jahan Dotson as like a deep, deep sleeper type. I still don't think he's going to end up turning into anything fantasy wise. But when you think about like deep dynasty stashes, that sort of thing, a guy that you get thrown in a trade this time of year that people aren't really caring about. And yet, as soon as they go out, and if they go out and draft a receiver in this upcoming draft, I think Dotson's value then is probably sunk. So it's not an exciting one compared to some of these other teams that we've talked about.
And they have such a light receiver depth chart. Even if you look behind Jahan Dotson, like, there's not a lot. They brought back Olamide Zaccheaus to be the third receiver there, who's like a coach's favorite, you know, good role player, but not a guy that's going to get a lot of targets, and probably a guy who should be your fourth receiver at best at this standpoint. They pick 48th overall in the second round. They pick 79th overall in the third round. Then they don't pick again until 122nd, the Eagles' fourth round pick that they have there. Then they don't pick again until the sixth round. Then they pick in the seventh round. Like, they only have 5 picks, and there's some big gaps there. So I think 48 or 79 could be a receiver. The one thing I would say for Dotson, and obviously, like, I still have a little, Dotson was a big miss for me as a prospect and as a player early in his career, but I still have a little candle lit that he could be like a functional NFL player. And I think he's been better than the stats would show in Philadelphia. However, the one thing I would say about him, like how he could maybe survive, is like, I think they probably look for like a perimeter player on day 2 of the draft. And there's a lot of guys like Chris Brazel, Chris Bell with a torn ACL that could go on day two, that like are guys that might not even be able to be ready to play right away, which would not be good for the Falcons, but could be good for Jahan Dotson, like able to contribute in September and maybe build some momentum. But we're stretching pretty thin on a Falcons team that is, yeah. I think we said all we can about the Falcons. We'll continue to monitor that quarterback situation. Speaking of quarterback situations, let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts, who solidified their quarterback situation, at least they believe so, by re-signing Daniel Jones on a two-year, $88 million deal that could be worth up to $100 million with incentives. Wide receiver Alec Pierce obviously re-signed on a big four-year, $114 million contract. Look at Laquon Treadwell just hanging around, man. Draft bust in 2016, still cashing checks, re-signs with the Colts. Wide receiver Nick Westbrook-Ikhine also signed with the team. Tight end Mo Alie-Cox brought back. Michael Clemens signs a free agent deal as an edge rusher. Arden Key signs a two-year deal. Derek Nandi signed with the Colts. Jerry Tillery re-signed with the Colts. Colby Wooden acquired in a trade with the Green Bay Packers in exchange for linebacker Zaire Franklin. Akeem Davis-Gaither signed a one-year deal. Linebacker cornerback Cameron Mitchell re-signed with the Colts. Cornerback Cam Taylor-Britt signs a one-year deal with the team. Safety Jonathan Owen signs a one-year deal, as did kicker Blake Groupe. He was brought back on a one-year deal here. Linebacker, edge rusher, wide receiver, offensive tackle are their team needs. We kind of have a similar situation here, Boone, where I think they're a team that could take a wide receiver in this draft at some point, even though they do not have a first-round pick.
Yeah, and I think the receiving group here is really interesting, and I feel like we spent a lot of time this offseason talking about them because of all the changes with Michael Pittman Jr. getting traded, with the contract that Alec Pierce got. Pierce, I still have questions. I think you do as well, but whether he can be that true number one receiver in this offense. But I think there could be a possibility for Josh Downs to be the guy that we hope to finally have that breakout. And I don't think it's just his talent. I don't think it's just his opportunity. I also think it's Daniel Jones's injury. Daniel Jones is not going to run as much. And you think back to when Daniel Jones was with the Giants and Wandell Robinson just getting peppered with targets. Could Downs potentially be that guy, that dump off for him, that guy that gets a ton of volume, because this offense is going to have to change, because coming off of a serious injury like that, I just don't see Daniel Jones running as much as he was last year. So I think that to me is the spot where fantasy wise, you look at Downs, and then also you look at the tight end spot and Tyler Warren, who last year early in the season was really strong. And after Daniel Jones got hurt, he fell off a little bit. Could he be a guy that steps up? And I will say, in the most recent update to my rankings, I moved Warren up to tight end 4. I moved him ahead of Tucker Kraft, because Tucker Kraft, coming off a serious injury, as much as we love Tucker Kraft, I did move him above him. And then Harold Fannin Jr., because I'm really expecting the Browns to take a receiver early. And if that happens, I think that just impacts Fannin a bit.
Yeah, no question. Downs should play more. Like, that was the problem for him last year, was he just didn't play enough snaps, right? I mean, because he was obviously not in two receiver sets. Right now, I mean, he's definitely got to play in two receiver sets over Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Come on. But they pick 47, 78. That's in the second and third round. That's where they've drafted receivers. Like, that's where they drafted Alec Pierce. That's where they drafted Michael Pittman, A.D. Mitchell, Josh Downs, the whole deal. So he should, like, I definitely think Josh Downs is a great post-type sleeper. Adam Harstead of Football Guys always jokes that the curse of reception perception is the year later curse. So it's the year after the year that you get really excited about the guy. Downs could certainly be that player. So I really like him as a post-type sleeper there. And I think this is, again, the biggest question is, do they take a wide receiver in this class? What type of guy is it? Typically with Chris Ballard, it's a big traitsy player. Downs has been the guy they've kind of gone off type for in that way. Usually they do go for those bigger athletic type wide receivers. But how confident are you in this offensive ecosystem overall with Daniel Jones coming back? Like, we saw the report from Schefter just a minute ago that he's expected to be ready for training camp. That's pretty aggressive for a guy who tore his Achilles in November.
Yeah, there were some quotes from Daniel Jones recently himself, you know, saying that the aim is week one, but he knows there's a lot of work to do to get to that point. I mean, I just look back, Warren Sharp had a great tweet at one point about this, you know, and it just kind of sums it all up. Before Jones got hurt, the Colts were 8-2, and they were number one in yards per play, EPA per play, success rate, points per drive. After his injury, as we know, 0-7, and they were 18th or worse in all of those categories, and they were down in like the mid-20s in most of them. So when you factor that in, when you factor in Michael Pittman Jr. being gone, even though I'm not the biggest Michael Pittman Jr. guy, I do think this is just going to be an adjustment for this offense, especially early in the season. And you're not going to get the same Daniel Jones, which is why I'm trying to figure out who could potentially capitalize on that. And I do think that, you know, Downs and Warren are guys that could work in that short to intermediate area and get a lot of work. Because also, when you're coming off a serious injury like this, he wasn't a guy with a cannon by any means before that injury. Is it going to impact some of those deeper throws for him? I think that's a possibility this year as well. Kind of mess with his mechanics maybe a little bit. So a lot of things to consider, I think, with Daniel Jones. And yes, I think it means this offense takes a little bit of a step back this year versus what we saw in the first half of last season, which was very impressive.
All right, we're going to take our final break here of the show. When we come back, we got two more teams to talk about quickly that do not have first round picks. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We've got two more teams here that do not have a first round pick. We're just going to group these two teams together here. We're not going to do the full shebang. Nobody needs me to read off like all the players that the Broncos added, okay? Here's what they did. They brought back J.K. Dobbins. They traded for Jalen Waddle. And then they brought back a bunch of other guys. That's interesting. We'll see what else they do. The Packers, they just traded away Dontavian Wicks. Don't worry, they got Sky Moore. They signed him to a free agent deal. That was probably their biggest outside addition on offense outside of Zaire Franklin. My God. Anyways, yeah, Wicks, he's out of the door. He's going to Philadelphia because they're trading A.J. Brown. They spiritually traded A.J. Brown months ago, actually. Everybody knows that. That's the deal there. So I think my question with these two teams, Boone, I want to just throw it to you this way to talk about these two teams, because I feel like they're relatively set at the skill position players. However, which one of these two teams, Denver, Green Bay, do you think is more likely to take a disruptive fantasy player, like someone who comes in here and shakes up the distribution of either the running back or pass catcher group for these two teams? Denver, Green Bay, no first round picks, but somewhere along the way, they add someone who shakes things up here.
I mean, Green Bay seems so set. Like, I know they could bring in a number two back potentially, or at least somebody to compete for that spot. I'd be surprised if they spend up on a receiver again. I think they have a pretty good receiver room with those top three guys, with Christian Watson, who obviously had a great fantasy season last year, Jaden Reed, who we like a whole bunch, and we hope that he can get back to some of the success he had a couple years ago before he had that year last year, which was kind of marred by injuries. And then Matthew Golden, who they took in the first round last year, and hopefully he can get his career going now that some opportunity has opened up there. So I don't really see where the Packers would make that play. I think for the Broncos, we could look and say they could get some guys, even with the picks that they have, right? You can talk about the depth of this tight end class. They're not going to be able to get one of the top tight ends and Sadiq or Eli Stowers. But you could look at some of the other guys. They've had a couple guys in for top 30 visits, Max Clara, Justin Jolly, you know, those guys could be options for them in round two potentially, because I don't think that Evan Engram and Adam Troutman, I don't think those guys are the answer at tight end. Are they going to be like truly disruptive players for fantasy in year one? Maybe not, but it's very difficult for these guys to get somebody without having that first round pick who could be that kind of player. And then the other thing I would bring up with the Broncos, it's not impossible they take a running back that shakes things up. And I think that might surprise a lot of people, especially with them bringing back Dobbins. But you're talking about top 30 visits. Jonah Coleman on a top 30 visit with the Broncos. Mm-hmm. So are they looking to potentially bring someone else in? And I think they would be smart too, because Harmon, we know how this story goes. J.K. Dobbins, he's going to get hurt. I hate saying that. I hate looking at a player like he's injury prone, but this guy has never had a healthy season since he entered the NFL. The last couple of years, he's had strong starts to the year with the Chargers a couple of years ago, with the Broncos last year, and then he gets hurt. Somebody else has to step up, and I would not be surprised at all if they take a running back to add to that group, knowing full well that Sean Payton likes to deploy multiple backs. And then R.J. Harvey really probably shouldn't be that workhorse guy. I think he has a really good role in that offense. I think he was good for fantasy when Dobbins went down last year, but I don't know that you really want him having to step up and be that workhorse, that bell cow. So why not go out and get another running back to eventually be that long-term option that you pair with Harvey when Dobbins gets hurt again this year, or just eventually hangs him up because he can't stay healthy?
So I think you're right that the Broncos have the clearest like need at tight end and at running back to add because of all the things you mentioned with Dobbins. However, they only have a second round pick. They don't have a third round pick. They have 2 fourth rounders. So that could be a running back. Like Jonah Coleman could maybe be available in the fourth round. He could be used there. Like that's definitely possible. I would say for Green Bay, who picks 52nd and 84th, I actually kind of would be surprised if one of those picks is not a wide receiver. You know, Reed is going to the last year of his contract. So is Christian Watson also going to the last year of his contract. Matthew Golden, first round pick last year, but I don't consider Matthew Golden a proven player based on what he did last year. I think there were flashes, but the film was kind of not terrible, but it was just fine. So I could really go one way or another on Golden. I do need to wrap up my evaluation on him, obviously from a charting perspective. They just love to take big-bodied receivers in like the third round. I think that's possible. They did add Savion Williams last year. Easy to forget Savion Williams in the third round last year because he had more rush attempts than targets, so I understand why people would forget about him, but that is a thing that happened. I kind of think they will add somebody in the wide receiver room, but I do like the three receiver set of Watson, who does have injury issues, Reed coming off an injury, and Golden, theoretically. But two really interesting teams that we will, of course, be watching in the NFL draft. Boone, appreciate this as always. Next time we see you, pal, we'll be doing a much more fun episode. We're going to do some prospect wish casting next week. So get your imagination cap on, pal.
Can't wait, and good luck with the 1,000 podcasts that you will do between now and then, man.
I would be doing less podcasts than I was doing today, but I need to get back to charting. That's what needs to happen here. But Boone mentioned it. There's going to be more podcasts because on Thursday, we are going to be back with Nate Tice for our last prospect preview. We're going to do a deep dive on the tight end class and talk about the top offensive linemen in this class because you need to know those guys, okay? I know they don't start in your fantasy lineup, but offensive line obviously matters. That's going to hit the feed at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Until then, we are out.